All right, everybody. Welcome to our first user day of the Cassandra track at ApacheCon. Glad that everyone is here. This is going to be, if you were here yesterday, it's going to be a lot smoother in terms of our time slots. We have hour time slots for every speaker, so it's just going to be a lot better transition. We also have another track going on in Mesquite, so Ed might want to bounce back and forth or, you know, whichever works for you or what seems more interesting, go there. Our first talk is Dinesh Joshi talking about Cassandra 4.0 and what's new. So, thanks.
Thanks, Nate. Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm Dinesh Joshi, and I'll be talking to you about 2 years in the making, what's new in Cassandra 4.0. Before we start, a little bit about me. I'm a senior software engineer. I'm also an Apache Cassandra committer. Been with the project for a little over a year, but I've been a Cassandra user for about 6-8 years now. I've been using it for a bunch of things like financial applications and time series stuff. So to get into this, the agenda for today is we'll be looking a little bit at the history of Cassandra, performance and efficiency changes that we are making in 4.0 that'll help you run your clusters more, you know, efficiently. And there are some changes pertaining to reliability and stability that we are making that also helps, you know, make Cassandra more robust. And finally, there are a lot more changes on the observability and operability of the database as such. After my talk, Chris Lofink is going to give a talk about some of the tooling that is introduced into Cassandra 4.0, and it will hopefully make things a lot easier from an operator standpoint. And finally, we'll be summarizing what we've talked here in this presentation. So, can anybody guess what this graph represents? Any guesses? Sorry? No. So, maybe that too, but it's the industry data growth. In the storage industry. Statistically speaking, we are generating about 40 zettabytes of data every year as a population, a human race. 40 zettabytes of data is a lot of data. And this was a study that was conducted by IDC, and I guess it was sponsored by one of the storage vendors, Seagate. And essentially what this says is that there has been an exponential increase in the data growth in our industry, and everybody is experiencing that, right? By 2025, this is expected to go up to 250 zettabytes. A zettabyte is, I think, around 1,000 petabytes, so that's a lot of data. So to switch over to what is the current state of Cassandra in the community, right? If you go out there and you want to use Cassandra, you have a bunch of options like 2.x series, which is by far the most stable series so far, and it's also very widely adopted in the industry. 3.0 is also stable, and it seems some adoption, and recently we fixed a bunch of issues with 3.0 and made it even more stable. And 3.11 has some performance improvements, and there are few folks in the industry that are using it, but it's not as widely adopted in the industry, right? And 4.0 is the next unreleased version, major version of Cassandra. And 4.0, you know, I've given this presentation a couple of times, but this is the first time that I'm giving this presentation after cutting the alpha for 4.0. So a lot of work has gone into 4.0, and just recently 4.0 alpha 1 was created, and it's available for testing. So that is the state of Cassandra in the community. Now, I'm sure everybody here is familiar with the Cassandra architecture. But just so that we are all on the same page about how Cassandra functions, I just want to go through with some of the architectural components. So in a Cassandra cluster, you have what is called as a node. Node is a kind of a storage unit which essentially stores some data for you. Overall, we call this a Cassandra ring. And each node within the cluster stores a range of data, which is called a token range. It's just terminology. And each node is replicating data to at least two other nodes, hopefully, if you set it up the right way. So each node has replicas, and each node is also responsible for some amount of data in the cluster. So as we grow the cluster, the throughput of the cluster changes, right? So how does Cassandra scale is, you know, when you want to grow your throughput or the amount of data that you store, you're going to add more nodes to the cluster, or you're going to add more disks to each node so that your data, your node becomes more dense as far as storage is concerned. And when you test the size of the cluster versus the throughput that the cluster can withstand, on an average, the cluster kind of, you know, tops out at 1,000 nodes. So if you try to grow beyond 1,000 nodes, then it's not going to scale any further. There's going to be sublinear scaling, and eventually the cluster will become unstable. So these are just some rough numbers here. And this is one of the barriers for Cassandra to keep, you know, growing in the industry, because as you've seen, the data has grown, so your cluster sizes have, on an average, also grown. Now, come 4.0, we have a lot of changes in 4.0, right? 4.0 started about roughly 2.5 years ago, and over the course of the last 2.5 years, there have been many, many changes in Cassandra. And on Trunk, at this point, there are a lot more than 300 changes. And all of these are not really just bug fixes or, you know, small changes. These are substantial changes, and some of those changes we will see in this presentation. So there's a lot that is coming into Cassandra 4.0, and this is not, I mean, the ones that I'm talking about are not the only changes. So let's start with repair. How many of you know what repair here is? Okay, so a lot of you know what repair is. But just so that we are, again, on the same page, Cassandra is an AP system on the CAP theorem, which means we maximize availability and partition tolerance at the cost of consistency. That does not mean Cassandra is not consistent. It means that Cassandra's nodes might be slightly out of sync, and they eventually converge to the same state. So that's what we call as eventual consistency. And repair is the function within Cassandra that will ensure that all these nodes, they are at the same state, or the data within the nodes is consistent. So if you lose a node, that doesn't mean that you will also end up getting conflicted data, right? So in 4.0, we've always had incremental repair in Cassandra, but incremental repair didn't really always work. Under certain circumstances, it probably didn't work. But 4.0 tries to make a real attempt at fixing incremental repair, and pre-4.0, a full repair, even post-4.0, a full repair is always more expensive than an incremental repair. And incremental repair tries to reduce the amount of time it takes to reconcile the differences in data. And with 4.0, we are, you know, as I said, making a very serious attempt at fixing incremental repair. So incremental repair should work in 4.0, and the impact of this particular thing or change is that pre-4.0, you had to either do full repairs or sub-range repairs, or you had to implement your own kind of repair, which took a long time. But in 4.0, as a user, you should see incremental repair working as expected, and you know, the time it takes to repair your cluster reduces significantly, down from sometimes days to minutes as well. So that's one of the big things that we are excited about. The next feature is transient replication. So another issue with the increasing data growth in our industry is that because Cassandra replicates data across multiple nodes, the cost that you have to bear from a hardware standpoint also increases significantly. So if you want to store 1 petabyte of data, now because of Cassandra's application, you might need to store 3 petabytes of data, right? That's just the cost you have to pay for availability. So transient replication is based on a paper that was published a long time ago, but it attempts to make things a lot more efficient from a storage standpoint. It makes a slightly different trade-offs, but it basically what it does is, in a general layman's term, when you set a replication factor of 3 on any cluster, or table, you have 3 replicas. So in this example, you have R1, R2, and R3 as 3 replicas, and all those nodes are full replicas. So now your disk requirement is 3x, which is what a regular cluster would impose on you. But with transient replication, what we do is we have 2 replicas, which are full replicas, and a 3rd replica, which is essentially a what we call as a transient replica. The idea of a transient replica is that it is a witness replica. So as writes come into your cluster, it will watch those writes, and it will act as a witness. And transient replication is really enabled by the incremental repair feature in Cassandra 4, which means that as your data gets repaired, this witness replica is going to drop that data. So in the best case scenario, where all of your nodes are in sync all the time, which does happen at times, you will not see 3x the data storage need, right? The witness replica will always keep dropping the data out of the storage in order to make space. So with this change, we expect up to 33% reduction in your storage use for an RF3 configuration. For higher RFs, you should see even better. 4.0 does have this feature, but it's, I believe, experimental. So you know, try it, but you know, make sure that you're just experimenting with it. And the main thing here is that although it might seem like now we are taking out 1 replica out of the equation, the durability guarantees are still the same, because we work on the principle of having repaired data within the cluster, right? And we only drop data which is repaired, not the unrepaired data. So the next big thing that 4.0 introduces is async internode messaging. So earlier, Cassandra did have asynchronous connections, network connections, but it did not have asynchronous network connections for internode communication. And what that means is we still used blocking I/O up to 3.0 and 3.11, but with 4.0 we are using NETi for the internode communication as well, and this gives us a lot of advantages. The big thing that we've noticed with this change is the latencies have improved quite dramatically. We've measured some of the latencies to be 40% lower on an average and about 60% lower on P99. And this is an ongoing effort to measure the performance impact. The bigger reduction is memory efficiency. So earlier, Cassandra used blocking I/O, and what that means is you need to use a thread for every connection that you spawn. And if you go back to how Cassandra's architecture works, every node in the cluster is maintaining a connection to every other node. Now, it's not just one connection. We have multiple connections that we open to any other node within the cluster, because we have small messages, large messages, and we also have the streaming connections. And what that means is that we use up a lot of threads. In the JVM, each thread has a stack, and that stack can be up to 1 megabyte in size. I believe Cassandra sets it at about 384K or 0.5 megabyte, but it's still a significant cost. So in a 1,000 node cluster, you're going to spend 5 gigabytes just maintaining those connections. And with async I/O, because we multiplex connections across a bunch of nodes, that cost goes down dramatically. We now have 1/10 the number of threads within the Cassandra daemon process. So that directly translates into better efficiency and latencies. Also, we are making use of TC Native and Netty. Netty's SSL bindings are directly to the JNI layer, and so that also helps speed up the encryption. So Netty's encryption, when combined with TC Native, is about 4 times faster than what regular JDK SSL encryption is. So overall, you would get better throughput and response times. Again, there are a bunch of people trying to characterize this performance change, but on an average, I would say 2x is a conservative estimate, depending on the size of the cluster that you are running. Another big change that's coming to 4.0 is zero-copy streaming. And zero-copy streaming is basically, under certain circumstances, we are able to directly transfer the entire SS table rather than, you know, transferring each partition or each chunk of the SS table. And this speeds up the streaming operations. So again, if you're using leveled compaction strategy, this is going to you're going to see a lot more impact. And we've measured this at near hardware bound speeds, which means that your network and I/O, disk I/O, are going to be the main bottlenecks and not the CPU. And this, the big significant change with this is that you will see a reduction in the mean time to repair or recover your node, which is a big change as well, because if you're paying by the hour or the minute to your cloud provider like AWS, and your node takes 20 hours to recover from a termination or a failure, then it's your cluster is at risk of losing data for 20 hours, because you could lose another node within those 20 hours and now you have unavailability. So this significantly reduces the time it takes for you to recover. So overall, I would say this also reduces the operational cost, because you can see Cassandra recovering much faster than before. We've also measured the change, and the green line that you see here is the 3.x series, the latest 3.0 that was available. And Netflix did this measurement, and what they observed is that on a 3.0 node, it took about 2 hours for them to recover 500 GB of data. This is 500 GB per node. And I think in 4.0, trunk, what they were measuring at that point was trunk, it took about 22 to 25 minutes. And the big thing that I would note here is the type of instance that you use on AWS, I3 2XL, 4XL, or 8XL, they also did a measurement with I3 XL, which is the lowest instance type. you'll see that the time it takes to recover is kind of stable in 4.0, and that's because you're not involving the CPU as much in doing the streaming task. Whereas in 3.0, the time is high, and it kind of reduces with the CPU that you're using. So the more resources you can throw at Cassandra in 3.0, it will stream faster. But in 4.0, even if you have a lower instance type, it's going to beat a higher instance type of 3.0. So this was, again, under certain circumstances that they measured, and more information is available in that Jira that's linked below. So these were some of the interesting features from a performance standpoint, right? Now, a lot of us here in the enterprise, we have needs to, you know, do some sort of SOX compliance or some sort of compliance. So we need to audit changes that happen to Cassandra. So one of the big features I would also say is audit logging that is coming with 4.0. And with this change, you can log everything, essentially, that Cassandra is receiving, or if a user is doing something on your system. And it is implemented in a way that it is very performant. We use something called as Chronicle Queue at the under the hood, and it's a library that allows us to log everything as fast as we can without really causing a large performance degradation. And this is a feature that would, as I said, help in compliance for your company. But the main thing to note is that with audit logging, you're not going to pay a whole lot of cost in terms of performance. So it's not one or the other. You will get a good performance along with the capability of logging things that you're interested in. So this was a big feature that was missing in Cassandra for a long time, and now we have it. The next big topic, I would say, is virtual tables. And this is, if you're a operator, if you have operated Cassandra at any scale at any point in time, you will notice that Cassandra has various ways in which we can pull data out of Cassandra. And there's a very different way of taking data out from Cassandra if you're trying to measure performance or you're trying to get to Cassandra's internals, right? You have to use JMX, and whereas with SQL, you can only query some of the tables. So virtual tables was introduced a while ago, and it brings basically the ability to create a virtual table in Cassandra, not by a user, but these are like system views that are provided by Cassandra. And it is queried through SQL, and basically what this means is that you can use your regular SQL shell or the data stacks drivers in the open source to talk to Cassandra and to query these tables. And what this essentially means is that the data that's provided here, you get it over the SQL channel without the involvement of JMX. And what do we get from JMX? We get a bunch of operational metrics, or we get the current state of Cassandra. So we poke at Cassandra's internals through JMX. And with this change, you don't have to do that. You can get pretty much all of it through JMX. Through virtual tables. And drivers do support that. Here's an example, and the talk that Chris is giving after mine would include virtual tables. So stay tuned for that. In this example, for example, you get metrics on the heap size for mem table, on and off heap size, and stuff like that. And so from an operator standpoint now, you don't have to like poke at Cassandra through JMX. You can just directly get it through virtual tables. Another example is if you want to see the variables that Cassandra is using at runtime, you can just query it using, show virtual variables, and it will show you a bunch of these variables. So virtual tables is one of the most useful feature from an operator standpoint. And the next interesting feature is SSL certificate hot reloading. And what does this actually mean? So a lot of us are operating Cassandra without SSL, and a lot of us also want to use SSL across the cluster. And what that means is we want SSL for our end-user client communication, and we also want SSL for inter-node communication so that we are securing communication between nodes. Now, whenever a certificate expires, you need to bounce that instance in order to, you know, pick up the new certificate. But with this change, Cassandra doesn't require you to bounce the instance. What it does is it watches your certificates for an update. And as the certificate is updated on disk, it reloads it automatically. And this it does both for the client communication, which means any driver that is connecting to Cassandra, and also for internode communication. And you can optionally also trigger it via a node tool command, so that if you want to hot reload the certificate immediately after updating it, then you can essentially do it. So it provides you both features. And the main advantage of this is there's no disruption to live traffic. For anybody who has tried restarting a Cassandra cluster, there are so many variables to restarting the entire cluster without losing availability that this feature makes it a non-issue completely. So what this means is you just update the certificates and Cassandra is going to pick up the new certificates without really requiring the operator to intervene anything. So 4.0 has this really awesome feature. And operators will love it. Because they don't have to worry about restarting the cluster anymore. The next feature, and this is an interesting one as well, is full query logging. So full query logging is also very similar to audit log, but the distinction here is this is capturing the raw queries for a very specific purpose, and that is to replay those queries against the cluster or against a different cluster. And it's a very high-performance query capture mechanism. Again, uses Chronicle Queue at the back end. And what it gives you is a replay tool and also a compare tool. And the main purpose of this tool is to replay. And a lot of you might wonder, why would you want to like replay traffic? So a lot of times when you upgrade a cluster or you are cloning a cluster and you want to ensure that two clusters, like when you upgrade a new cluster, those two clusters have the same data or would respond the same way to queries. And earlier you had to write something custom, but with full query logging, what you can do is you can just point at one node or a subset of nodes, and you can capture the query log hitting your cluster, and then you can take those, and then you can replay those queries against another cluster, presumably an upgraded cluster, to ensure that both clusters also end up giving you back the same data. And this is a very important tool in, you know, ensuring that when you upgrade a cluster, that the upgrade actually goes through correctly, and then you are not going to see any differences in the responses from the upgraded cluster. So this is a very useful testing tool before you actually pull the trigger and upgrade all the nodes in a cluster. So all in all, here's the summary of Cassandra 4.0 versus 3.0. There are many features, but from an operability standpoint, I think Cassandra is really 4.0 is coming along very well. There are many changes, small changes that have gone into 4.0 for better operability. From a scalability standpoint, there are a lot of interesting performance changes that have happened in 4.0. There are a few things that I also should have mentioned, but things like checksummed protocols, right? These are also introduced in 4.0. But these are, you know, things that you'll discover if you read the README. So it's not just all performance, it's also robustness. Latencies are also better in 4.0, significantly better compared to 3.0. And overall, from a recovery standpoint, 4.0 offers better recovery characteristics. So that's my take on Cassandra 4.0. And that's pretty much it from me. You can get started at our homepage. And we've not yet, I believe, posted the alpha link, but it's available in the dev list as a posting. So if you want to try out 4.0 alpha, please go ahead and download it and try it out. We are, as a community, still testing 4.0, and we will go through a bunch of tests through various folks in the community. And once 4.0 is robust enough, we will have a GA release, hopefully sometime soon. So that's pretty much it from me. I'm open for questions now, if anybody has questions. Yeah.
Are you playing Tool? Presumably that requires storing some metadata or something?
What kind of metadata are we talking about? So it basically just is a, you know, is a log of all the queries. So yes, it will have some metadata. So you don't have to specify anything out of the ordinary for you to replay through the logs. And I think there are some instructions on how to run those tools. Also, so if you check it out, you'll see it's in the tools directory. I don't believe that is a feature that we've planned. That would be a nice tool to have. Like you can like query that virtual table periodically, and you can persist it as a time series. So you can see all the metrics changing over time. You can definitely do that, but as a database, it doesn't offer that functionality. Sure. Any other questions? So you can do an in-place upgrade, or you can run it in mixed mode. So we generally have one version compatibility, so one major version compatibility. So you can always upgrade one node to 4.0 and do it on a rolling basis, so that you know the cluster doesn't have to stop and start again. Any other questions? Yeah.
I would like to contribute on testing Apache 4.0. Is there a short list of already done tests and to-do tests?
That's a great question. So at this point, there are a few components that we would like to test. So there's a wiki page which says, hey, these are the major components in Cassandra that need to be tested thoroughly, and so we have that page. But generally, what we are adopting is there are big users of Cassandra in the community, and they are testing it internally, and you know, giving feedback or opening Jiras. And the way they are testing it is for their particular use case. So if you're using Cassandra in a certain way, and you know, you would like to test it, just test 4.0 like you would use previous versions of Cassandra. And if you find any bugs or issues, then report them or see if somebody else has already reported those, so that you know that for your use case, 4.0 actually works. Because you could see regressions in performance, you could see regressions in behavior, or you know, just a simple upgrade may break because of some code path that we've not yet seen. So that's the approach that the community is taking at this point. Yeah. I don't think anybody in particular went and did all these changes so that we could run Cassandra on the edge. But I think you're talking about like separating the storage component from the serving component, so you could run you can scale those two components independently, right? So I don't think we went in with that intention. But yeah, if you want to use it that way, it might be possible to use it that way in the future. Anybody else? Yeah.
So the transient replica, doesn't it take some time to build it as well? Or is it just a better trade-off?
What do you mean by... No, so that's not exactly how it works. So a transient replica is like a regular replica that exists all the time in the cluster. The only difference is that it is a witness to all the writes. So it's going to provide you, whenever you do a write in, let's say, an RF3 configuration, whenever you do a write, it's going to witness the write and it's going to persist it on disk like any regular replica. But the moment the data is repaired across the cluster and these replicas are in sync, the transient is going to just drop that data. So that way, what it does is the amount of disk that it uses is only proportional to the amount of unrepaired data in your cluster. So if you're running incremental repair and its incremental repair is running, let's say, every 10 minutes, then you will see only a little bit of disk usage on the transient replica, but it's always going to be around. So it's not like it's instantiated, built, and then torn down. It's part of your cluster like any other replica.
We have a session tomorrow too on transient replication.
Yeah. Yes. So with these changes, I don't believe anything changes from the configuration standpoint. There might be slight differences in the way you configure Cassandra, but really what we are doing is keeping the same interface at the top, but internally, instead of using a pool of threads, we are using NetEase async event loop. So that way, you still have the same knobs and tunables. Just the difference is now we use an async way of communicating rather than asynchronous way, or rather than a blocking IO. All right. Any other questions? Cool. All right. Thank you.